time to pull up a chair and talk some Dynasty football. I am your host, J.J. Wenner.
I'm Don Detweiler.
I'm Rob Mongol.
I'm Kit Vidalich.
And this is the Rider Dynasty podcast. Tonight on the show, we are discussing Camp Battles, the running back edition. These are the players who are going to compete all year for carries and targets. We'll weigh in on our favorites and help you decide which way to go. Now, before we get to tonight's topic, do me a favor. Leave a rating and a review for the pod. Give us a follow on Twitter at Rider Dynasty. And if you could, visit our website, rideordynasty.com. Now, gentlemen, let's check on the news. Don, you almost ruined this before the pod. I wanted to ask you, the Steelers just released David DeCastro. I was going to ask you if you thought that they should move Kendrick Green over from center. I know they just drafted him. Or if there is somebody to slot in, but I heard that they signed Trey Turner.
So yeah, Trey Turner had been in earlier in the week for a visit. He left without a contract. And the curious thing was for OTAs and minicamp, DeCastro was in camp but did not participate, didn't even suit up, was just kind of hanging around. And that led to some speculation that the lingering injuries that he had last year had either not healed completely or that it just wasn't in him and he was ready to go because all of his buddies had basically gone and the entire offensive line group had turned over. Turner's an interesting guy to plug into the spot. It was former Pro Bowler, but last year had a injury-riddled kind of bad year, but he is only 28, so it's an interesting get to plug in. The idea of moving Green over is a possibility. Green was drafted to be a center, but had played predominantly at guard and could do either, but they really like what he brings to the center position with his athleticism. The other opportunity would have been to just slot BJ Finney in as the other guard, but the Steelers are always loath to play their second center. They really like to keep that guy off the field to make sure that they always have one. Personally, I'm not huge on Trey Turner. What I would have tried to do was pursue Moses, the former right tackle from Washington, get him and then kick Zach Banner into that guard spot. Zach Banner's just a mountain of a man and would have been a complete mauler on that side, and that would have made a huge running right side. We'll see how this all plays out, though, now.
Yeah, Moses is coming to deliver the Jets to the promised land. Supposedly, he is meeting with them, and he likes Saleh, so hopefully he gets there. Jets could use all the help they can get on the offensive line. Kit, with the news about DeCastro, does your opinion on Najee Harris change at all for this season?
For this season, completely. I mean, I was already speaking with other people who I trust and like and talk about with fantasy in my leagues, and you know, a number of them were lower on Harris than I was. And you know, this is a dynasty podcast, so I don't think this necessarily materially affects his dynasty outlook moving forward. There was already the concern that Ben retires and then they, you know, have to do a retool, but it's going to involve a lot of volume. But if I'm looking at a redraft, if I'm looking at a win now team, you know, I'm not paying up for Najee because I see his ceiling as probably being Le'Veon's rookie year, which like is a good year, but it's something like 800 yards at, you know, 3.5 to 3.8 a carry, and then hopefully getting the catches on the dump offs, which I guess Ben will probably have to be dumping off a lot. But you know, I still think it's just the upside is capped so much there that if I'm really looking for I need to win this year, and I'm looking to make that move for a piece that's going to help me put me over the top, he's not the guy I'm looking at right now. But to the larger point, I don't think it really detracts from his overall dynasty value because he is a first round rookie. He's going to get the 5 years and they're going to ride him over the next 5 years.
Fair enough assessment. I always worry though about investing in somebody in dynasty who does lose a year. I'd rather not have somebody lose a year. However, in my opinion, for what it's worth, I think Najee, based upon his attempts alone, is going to be worth it this year.
Well, and right. And if you look at what I said, as if he reproduces Le'Veon's year, I think Le'Veon had 1,150 all-purpose yards and 40 catches. So you're still a startable player. So, you know.
I would take it. Rob, according to Pro Football Talk, teams are being allowed to challenge whether a COVID diagnosis is considered a non-football injury for unvaccinated players. This would be the first step in players not being paid if they miss a game and aren't vaccinated. Do you believe that the teams win this fight?
The teams ultimately control what happens in the NFL, so if they're going to push for it, I think it ultimately gets done. But I don't think this is a good idea. On one hand, you want all your players to get vaccinated, but at the end of the day, these guys signed a professional contract. If they come down with COVID, they get sick, it's out of their hands for the most part. They shouldn't be losing a paycheck because of it.
Even if they decided they don't want the vaccine, and if somebody like Cole Beasley refuses to wear a mask or abide by the regulations, would that change your mind?
If he doesn't do those things, it's stupid, but it shouldn't affect his paycheck.
Don, are you on the same page?
I'm really...
I saw you pondering over there.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm really at two minds of this thing, because I feel like in other walks of life, if your employer is telling you you have to wear the mask and you have to do all these other things, I see the compliance requirements, not necessarily having to get the vaccine, but the compliance requirements as part of doing business. And if you're not keeping up your end, that's grounds for termination in any other walk of life, because you're not meeting the requirements of your workplace. So as much as I want to back the players and the opportunity to choose and all this, if you're deciding not to take the vaccine, that's your deal, but you got to do all the other stuff. Now, if you do all the other stuff and you get sick and miss, you should get your check. But if you're in violation of those other things, then too bad, so sad.
Yeah, right. I think I'm leaning more in your direction, Don. But of course, the worry is, and I think Rob, coming from a legal perspective, is how can you prove that you followed all the guidelines? How can you prove, right? It's what you can prove, not what actually happens, Rob, correct?
Exactly that. And I'm sure some attorneys that get paid way more than I do per hour are putting together those exact guidelines right now for the NFL, and probably some people on behalf of the Players Association doing the same thing.
Who's that? Like Kardashian or Effley Bailey? I think they're both dead, but I don't know any current big name lawyers.
Rusty Harden.
Everyone knows Rusty now.
Ooh. That sounds like a sex move if you're asking me. So I will never say a Rusty Hard-On, because it seems like something bad happened there. All right, gentlemen. Now on to the main topic. Training camp battles, running back edition. Now, the days of an RB1 having an 80% touch share are practically over. Derrick Henry, Zeke Elliott, they might still have that. Outside of that, you're not really seeing it. Committee backfields are common, and if you grab the right player, your team will benefit. Now, we are going to look at some of the backfield battles and let you know where to place your chips. Now, first on the docket is Denver. Last year, Melvin Gordon was brought to the Broncos to piss off all of the Philip Lindsay managers. And he did. Pissed us off. Philip Lindsay is now gone. 1 year later, Javonte Williams is joining Gordon on the Mile High Club. Now, Don, I think that's what a Mile High Club is, right? A club that's in Denver?
We'll just go with that.
Don, what is the outcome of the Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams battle?
So long term, the outcome is this is the end for Melvin Gordon. But it's not going to be until after the season. There's too much money committed. There's too much at stake, and you need two running backs, especially in a 17-game season. Last year, Melvin Gordon was able to play 15 games, and the other running backs kind of mixed in and throughout. Even Lindsay only played 11. So you needed another guy, and you needed another quality guy. Javonta definitely provides that, and you already lose what would be 150 carries in Lindsay's share if you protract what he had over the duration of the season. That's a really good rookie share and a really good compliment back. Now, Gordon last year had 215 plus carries and had 10 TDs, which is all nice, but that's also the third most touches he's ever had in the season. The chances of him doing that again, well, we don't know. Denver did invest a little bit in their offensive line. They put a third round pick on the kid from Wisconsin, Whitewater, to come in and play either guard or center. He can do either. So that should improve the interior running, which does speak well to both of these guys' strengths. And I really like Javonte, and I like him long-term way better than I like Gordon. But I think Gordon carries the load for the predominant part of this season, and then that fades into Javonte as it goes on.
Fair enough. Kit, so as Don said, Melvin Gordon's contract is over after this season. Are you changing your approach to Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams, whether or not you are a contender versus in a rebuild?
Completely. And, you know, I don't want to just be boring and say agree with Don. I think after this year, it's the Javonte show, and I've been a Javonte truther. I had him over ETN pre-draft and post-draft. I just love his tape, and I think that they actually have an up-and-coming line. And, you know, if not this year, at some point, I mean, maybe not, but at some point they'll figure out the quarterback and they have the weapons that then it'll just be all systems go, right? I could see, like, you know, all over the top, Javonte being the guy. But yeah, it pretty simply kind of slots in. If you're somebody who's a contender, I don't think you need to go out and sell Melvin Gordon for whatever you can get. I think Melvin Gordon's going to get the passing work. I think there's a good chance he gets the goal line work. I mean, you know, he does have some injury concerns. Well, I guess, no, he doesn't have injury concerns. He's missed some games in the past, but he's generally pretty healthy, and he was good last year. He wasn't just a volume guy, right? He was good. He averaged 4.6 a carry. He's a good receiver who's caught over, you know, 60 balls multiple times in his career. And so I think that, you know, if you want to win, if you're, you know, a flex player away from being confident about your team as a contender, I would definitely go ahead and give up a second for Melvin Gordon, especially because if you are a contender, it'll be a late second, right? That being said, if, you know, 5 weeks in, Javonte Williams is getting six carries a game, I am still completely targeting him and trying to find that owner and say, hey, you know, looks like Javonte's not the guy. What do you want for him, right? Because I do think that longer term, he's the one who's going to take over, as Don said.
Yeah, Melvin Gordon did have a good year last year. 66% of his starts were either running back one or running back two. I'm not sure what his ADP is. I didn't want to start typing on my computer because I have a mechanical keyboard, which is loud AF.
I know in Dynasty it's low. Let me put it that way.
It has to be low. So I think you could do worse than floating out like a third or a fourth for Melvin Gordon for the season if you're a contender, seeing what you can get. But obviously the long-term play is to go with Javonte Williams. Rob, Mike Boone, Royce Freeman, Levante Bellamy. Anybody else there who's going to challenge Javonte or Melgo?
Not a chance. It's a two-man backfield.
Yep, couldn't agree more. All right, there are a few absolutes in the world. Death, taxes, Sean McVay being an offensive genius. Well, you can add Pete Carroll's love for Chris Carson to that list. When healthy, I can't see Chris Carson not leading the backfield in touches. However, Kit, the rest of that backfield is filled with some promise and some promises broken, if we're honest. Who is going to emerge?
So I would preface it by saying I agree with the first part of what you're saying, right? Chris Carson is amazing. And part of what makes Chris Carson amazing is how violently and wonderfully he sacrifices his body to get every extra yard. And that inherently makes him an injury-prone individual. I think every time that Chris Carson is available for a game, he will be the guy who gets 60-70%+ of the touches. He acquitted himself as a pass catcher last year, right? He was legitimate passing option there. But I think you have to look at him as one of the most likely starters to miss games if you're looking at the entire NFL, right? And so then a team that is still going to be committed to the run, there's going to be value in whoever the number two is, right? So we're probably talking about, at least in my mind, and Penny, Rashad Penny versus Alex Collins, who's actually made the roster coming into training camp this year. I always liked the way Collins ran, but I am a Penny truther. I think that right before the injury, Penny was finally starting to flash. I think that he has the receiving chops to be a different type of back, right, where he could be a little bit more versatile. You know, obviously, if Carson does, I do think it will be a split, but I could see Penny being kind of the high-value portion of that split, right, where he's the one who's getting the catches. He's the one who is getting the big plays. Maybe Collins gets the goal line work or the early down work, but I'm just going to still hang on to being a Penny truther. You know, I liked what I saw in flashes, and I think that if Carson was to go down, he would be somebody who I view as a weekly starter. Maybe not, you know, the RB2 position, but as a flex guy.
Yeah, I don't know if Chris Carson is as fragile as you're making him out to be. He did only play in 12 games last year, but I mean, the two previous years he played in 15 and 14 out of 17 games. I mean, that's not bad for a running back. I just don't know. I mean, last year in 12 games, he had 141 carries. I don't know if I'm buying into Penny. I mean, Rob, Penny's pick in the first must still sting some Seahawks. Do you believe he's the minute mouse to Carson's courageous cat?
If you're a Seahawks fan, it has to sting. What a bust of a first round pick. Was it back in 2018, 2017? We've hardly seen him on the field, but I'm close to being a Rashad Penny truther. I don't want to go. I don't want to go out as far as Kit did here. I liked what he was doing before he went down with a torn ACL. I thought he was starting to eat seriously in a Chris Carson's workload a bit, and it was becoming a much closer to 50-50 split than any Chris Carson owner would like. That being said, the guy can't stay on the field. So when he's healthy, he's going to get touches. He's going to get, you know, maybe 30% of the carries, 30% of the snaps for the Seahawks. But when is he going to be healthy? Right now, I think it's the Alex Collins show for the number two pick, or for the number two role in that backfield.
What? Alex Collins. Alex Collins, who even his camp hype article says, only because Chris Carson, DJ Dallas, Travis Homer, and Rashad Penny were out, did he take all the snaps.
Hey, Chris, Alex Collins was
You think
thing.
Alex Collins is gonna outpace? I mean, I'm going to even throw. So we talk about DJ Dallas, Travis Homer, Josh Johnson. You think Alex Collins is going to out-snap all of those guys?
I'll get to Josh Johnson in a second. I am a Josh Johnson truther, but you mentioned...
Speak your truth, Rob.
You mentioned two Jags out of Miami that are not a threat to anyone's workload. They don't even deserve to be on an NFL roster. Travis Homer is a pass-catching back at best.
And
he's still learning how to play running back.
And I was going to say, I mean, talk about running hard. I mean, I remember 2018. I remember watching Alex Collins play for the Ravens. I think it was 2018, and being like, "Oh, this dude is a hard runner." You know, like I know he broke his leg and sold drugs and all that in between, but like he showed some flashes that I haven't seen out of DJ Dallas and Travis Homer ever. Right, and
so my
wait. Hold, oh no! Time out. You can't just say he broke his leg and sold drugs.
Didn't he get arrested at a car crash where he? We can pause here, but like literally broke his leg in the car crash, and as a result of that, had multiple pounds of some drug in his car and got arrested for possession with intent. I thought that was what happened.
Oh, I believe you.
Okay.
I'm not positive. Doubting you. Listen, I grew up with the Michael Irvin Cowboys. Okay. So a football player having like hundreds of pounds of weed in his car, I think that was just the defensive lineman on that team. That's how they drove around.
Fair.
So
sometimes you need hundreds of pounds
of weed. I'm not
surprised. I was not aware of Alex Collins' off-the-field issues. It doesn't really change my take here, but what I will note is – you know, he had a good year in Baltimore, his 1 or 2 years in Baltimore. But where was he before that? With the Seahawks. And Pete Carroll hated him a few years ago. He was a fumble machine.
Okay.
And he got cut from the Seahawks because of it. So I think he comes back. He has a number two role until Penny's healthy, which is, I think it's going to be a bit. And he's going to be on an extremely short leash with Pete Carroll. I think, you know, this is... stop number two, and he will boot him out and let some other team take on his fumbling issues if that's what's going to happen this year.
So Rob, is it safe to say that you believe Alex Collins will deliver this time, as opposed to the car accident where he didn't actually deliver? No, little The Wire joke. Anyway, let's move on, Rob. I'm going to stick with you, much like Urban sticks to Tebow. Last week, we discussed the wide receiver situation in Jacksonville. Now, it is time to look at running backs. Travis Etienne was brought in to compete with James Robinson. Of course, Urban's also signed a former Buckeye back, Carlos Hyde. Where do you think the carries go this year, Rob?
I think Carlos Hyde is purely a backup to James Robinson. I'm not too worried about him getting on the field for a significant number of snaps. But I do think James Robinson leads that backfield in snaps, and Etienne is very much the third down back who works himself into to other situations as well. If Urban Meyer gets creative with the offense, could definitely see situations where Robinson and Etienne are sharing the field together, maybe flexing Etienne out wide. He's been playing wide receiver all minicamp. There's a decent amount of hype coming into him as coming around to him as a receiver right now. But I have not liked anything Urban Meyer's done this offseason. The first positive thing I can say about Jacksonville is that there's news today that Tim Tebow might not make the 53-man roster. It's the smartest thing they've done all offseason.
Shocking. Shocking. Kit, Urban Meyer is traditionally a 66-33, right? Two-thirds, mm-hmm. one-third type split based on his last few years at Ohio State. Do you agree with Rob? You think it's going to go to James Robinson?
I do. I think that that's – first of all, let me step back and say that I'm concerned, right? I mean, I'm worried that anybody who comes to the NFL who previously has all of his crazy ideas validated and then comes with those same crazy ideas thinking he's going to be the genius that takes over the NFL is somebody who I'm skeptical about, right? Let me put it that way.
Chip Kelly.
Yeah, that I didn't want to say that dark word, but that's who I think it could be, 2.0, right? And so I think the whole offense I view with overall skepticism. That being said, I think they have, we mentioned this I think last week, a sort of a boring traditional offensive coordinator, right, who is likely to probably want to grind the ball a little more, especially with a rookie quarterback. So, you know, I do think T-Law probably trusts Etienne. I do think that Meyer would want him to be schemed, but if I'm going to rely on one of the two for this season, I think that Robinson is going to kind of increase his dynasty value and be a viable player this year. I don't think he'll ever achieve what he was pre-NFL draft in terms of his value or production, right, where it was, oh, he's going to be the guy who's getting 25 touches a game, but I think he's the one. And that particularly his sort of value based on perception will spike as the season starts, because he'll be getting 15 plus touches while they do gimmicky stuff with ETN and try to kind of work their way into whatever they're trying to figure out.
Exactly what Kit said there. Daryl Bevel's offensive coordinator now. I believe it was The Athletic. So one of the beat writers covering the Jags today came out and said exactly what Kit said. The quote was, offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel has shown a past tendency to give more of his offensive rushing focus to backs with a similar skill set to James Robinson. And I think that absolutely holds true going into this year. And it fits what Daryl Bevel wants to do and what Urban Meyer wants to do with, you know, a two-thirds, one-third split. And James Robinson was just an efficiency machine last year. He had an insane snap percentage, but he wasn't actually running the ball that much because Jacksonville was terrible. So I think he can do a bit more with a bit less this year.
Don, also in Jacksonville, one of my favorite sleepers in Tampa Bay last year, Dare Ogunbowale and Divine Azigbo. It's quite a pair of names there. Anybody to worry about?
Negative. Neither one of them went to Ohio State, and they have no connection, which seems to be a criteria here in some way, which is ridiculous on its face. But realistically, there's now too many mouths to feed between Hyde and Robinson and Etienne. And even if Etienne is more gadget than running back, it doesn't matter. That's still a percent share. So there's just too many mouths to feed. Those guys are going to be afterthoughts or injury plugs.
Fair enough, Kit. I'm going to stay in the great state of Florida, he said sarcastically. Earlier this offseason, I was staring at this backfield and didn't have any idea what would happen in Tampa Bay. Then they went and signed Giovanni Bernard. Kit, did that signing make the backfield crystal clear, or did it muddy the waters?
So I would say it makes it clear to some extent in terms of which of anybody I would want for fantasy and dynasty. And it's Rojo, right? I mean, let me step back and say, the conversation about Lenny and his pass catching ability has been weird, because when he caught 73 passes but had like a low yards per catch in a very bad offense, he was categorized as the least efficient pass catching back there is. And then last year he had this little run where, because Rojo sucks at catching, he was considered their pass catching back on a great team. So I don't really understand the narrative around Lenny, but if Giovanni Bernard is going to take away from anything, it's going to be the pass catching role. And that's not Rojo's role. I've been a Rojo truther. I think that Rojo looked great last year. I mean, going into week 12 or 13, I can't remember, but until he basically got, I don't remember the order, he got COVID and hurt his finger, broke his finger, or, you know, pinky, or one of the other, he was, Lenny was an inactive player. I mean, they said, nope, Rojo's enough, and we can kind of mix in with Vaughn or whoever else we have. And so I'm of the opinion that Rojo is the better early down running talent. Neither of them are necessarily high upside players because, you know, let's say either one of them went down, then maybe Lenny switches into the early down role, but Gio takes third down role. So it's kind of a boring answer, but I think if I'm looking at it, I want Rojo. And if I'm looking at long-term, I think Rojo's still 22. Maybe he's turned 23 before the season. I could see him showing enough or flashing enough that he gets a second contract somewhere as a 1A or a 1B and remains fantasy relevant.
I didn't expect that answer.
Did you expect it to be Lenny?
Nope, I did not. Don, where do you see this going?
So Kitts made some interesting points here, and in this case, it's kind of a follow-the-money deal. Tampa had one mission coming off the Super Bowl win, and that was get the band back together, and that's kind of how Lenny wound up back there. It's a one-year deal for very little money, realistically. He's a depth dude. He might get some goal line touches, whatever. Realistically, I don't really want either one of them as my RB2. They're super flex, or they're flex players at this point for me, because you just can't trust anybody to be consistent. So I wouldn't want either one of those guys as my RB1 or RB2. Gio Bernard is an interesting guy, and he's only going to get run here as a third down back, and that's what his role is going to be on this offense. BA has been notorious for putting a guy in a spot, and that's all they do. And that's exactly what it's going to be. Rojo is going to run the ball. That's great. Gio's going to catch the ball. That's great. Lenny's going to support that, and good for him. And maybe Keyshawn Vaughn does something. Maybe.
He plays special teams, according to Bruce Arians. He hates Keyshawn Vaughn.
Yeah, that was the report today. I was just going to say that. BA came out and said, Keyshawn better get better at special teams, because that's all he's doing on this team. So Keyshawn Vaughn is not long for Tampa Bay. I'm assuming he's going to be traded, because they have no interest in playing that dude.
So let me just quickly jump in. If my initial reaction was that I like any of these guys a lot as a dynasty asset or someone you can rely on, that's not what I meant to convey. I would agree with Don's assessment that it's rough all around. It'll be week to week. It'll be game flow dependent. Flex guys if you need them is kind of where I'm at with both of them.
Giovanni Bernard's going to be an RB2 or better.
Oh, okay.
This year.
Okay. You're that guy. Okay. Wasn't sure.
Well, it's entirely possible, given Brady's history with pass-catching running backs. If we look at this,
and I think
Gio's
much better
next,
than
it's
James
possible.
White.
Okay.
He could have had James White, and they got Gio instead. I don't know what happened behind the scenes there. But I
just think Gio, after suffering in effing Cincinnati for all these years. Like, can you imagine like being in Cincinnati and then all of a sudden you're released to Tampa Bay? Like, what? Wait, what? This is awesome. There's guys who are blocking.
Like, hey, I saw you
That's
guys on the TV.
That's what those five guys do. I thought they turned around and looked at the quarterback. Wow.
We have Pro
awesome.
Bowlers. It's amazing.
Woo. Yeah, I'm excited for Gio Bernard. This is a shout out to Santiago Casanova. He loves Gio. I'm on board 100%. Not as a dynasty asset. Obviously, he's old. But in redraft this year, I would take him before any other Tampa back.
So,
just because of his receiving work. And I think what he's going to get when they're trying to do the no huddle, that's where Gio's going to be in there and be a much bigger improvement over Leonard Fournette.
And I just say, I hadn't considered that, but I respect all of your opinions, and I hadn't sort of thought about it that way. I thought of him as a kind of a nothing veteran add-on, but you're right. He probably has the best receiving set. Tom Brady loves dumping it off. I hadn't really caught that angle. It's a good way to consider it.
Well, Kit, just for the record, last year I was saying this about Dare Ogunbowale. So,
right. And, you win some, you lose some.
So don't listen to anything I say. All right. Wow. CJ Procise. Wait, that was the only guy we didn't mention in the backfield. Okay. Nobody's going to say anything. We'll move on. We are now going to San Francisco, and Rob, I notice you don't have any flowers in your hair. That's a shame, because we are going to meet some not-so-gentle people there. The Niners have a roster in motion this offseason, adding Trey Sermon and Elijah Mitchell in the draft. And Rob, they added your favorite, Wayne Gallman, to veterans Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson. Is this going to be another nightmare backfield in the Bay?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a nightmare. But I think if you're going to get any usable pieces out of it, Raheem Mostert is going to get his carries when he's healthy. And if I had to pick a second player, it's going to be Trey Sermon. I love Wayne Gallman, but I think they're going to give Trey Sermon every opportunity to win that number two role, especially with Jeff Wilson starting the season on the PUP.
Was there a more expected news flash than a San Francisco running back ending up on PUP? I mean, that's where they all end up. So I'm gonna stick with my theory that the reason they don't go with a lead back is because their lead backs can't remain healthy. I think Trey Sermon is going to fill that role and remain healthy, but I'm a little bit biased. Don, are you on the same page with Rob, or are you coming over to my side of the field?
I guess I'm going to split the fence here, because the guy I want dynasty-wise is definitely Sermon of that mishmash of things. Because if we look at the contract standing of just about all these guys, you're going to have a bunch of free agents next year, and that backfield picture becomes a whole lot clearer. This is a great situation for Sermon because he doesn't get blown up in year one. He doesn't get thrown to the wolves while he's learning how to be an NFL running back, because regardless of how good you are, you have to learn how to be an NFL running back. And the conditioning and training and everything are so much different than even the guys at the mega programs have ever seen. It is incumbent on them to learn and grow, and this is a great situation for that, for Sermon to do. Especially as a guy who kind of bounced around college football as he did, going from Oklahoma to Ohio State. Long term, I think he's the guy to have here. The rest of it, though, I mean, for the annual bit, great. Mostert is probably the guy who gets the highest fantasy points this year. Probably going to get the most receptions. Probably going to get the most touches of that pile. But yeah, he's going to be inconsistent too, and it's going to be the San Francisco mishmash all over again.
Did you just refer to that running back room as a pile?
Well, I mean, that's about what they're doing, is just throw another one in there.
Perfect. It seems like there's a pile of players, and whoever they pull out, they throw in on the field.
Whose turn is it this week?
Jamichael Hasty, Josh Hokett? Any of those guys lighting your lamp?
Hasty had a mini breakout for 2 or 3 weeks last year, started doing some things, maybe could sneak in as a low-end flex play for your roster, and then tore his ACL. He's an undrafted guy coming off an ACL tear. I don't have any expectations for him. I don't think he sees another snap as a 49er with as loaded as that backfield is, and with them bringing in two rookies. But to address what Don said, I guess this season I'm full steam ahead on Mostert, but I think dynasty-wise, Sermon is the play, and I think it's kind of a thunder and lightning thing this year. Sermon is going to be a much better in-between tackles runner, and Mostert just has electric speed. He's a guy stolen on the field. He can do so much for your fantasy team in limited snaps that even if it's a 50-50 split, he's the back I'd prefer to own out of the two for this year. But next year, he's a free agent. as is Jeff Wilson, and it's going to be the Trey Sermon and I think Elijah Mitchell show. And I absolutely love Elijah Mitchell for 2022. He's not doing anything this year. He is purely a Raheem Mostert handcuff. He's also electric in the open field. He's going to run away from every defender, and I think that's what they want to use him for in San Francisco starting next year, is a replacement for Mostert.
And, you know, just as a reminder, one of the other things besides the running backs that really hurts the running backs in San Francisco, Kyle Juszczyk, you know, you have a fullback who is getting a couple carries. He is getting, 30 receptions, 20 receptions? Like, and even those routes that he runs, all of that takes away a little bit from the running backs, which is why I understand people avoiding Trey Sermon. I'm on board with him this year. I'm really hoping, only because I drafted him in a really big league, that he pans out. So this is a completely selfish viewpoint. But I'm also a big fan of Matt Waldman, who believes in Trey Sermon. And I believe in Matt Waldman, so I believe in Trey Sermon.
Well, I was just going to quickly jump in. I mean, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of Trey Sermon. I've heard, you know, knocks on his talent, knocks on whether he actually is a good running back. But I still wonder if he's being undervalued. I gave away a pick that turned into Trey Sermon recently. But, like, you know, they've turned guys like, and maybe, you know, you like Jermichael Hasty more than him, or things like that. You like, you know, Tevin Coleman. I mean, because Tevin Coleman wasn't that successful. But they've turned guys that are not great. And you know, I'm not trying to say that Kyle Shanahan's offense is the same as Mike Shanahan's offense, but they have similar success in turning kind of Jags into, wow, mildly successful guys. If he's a little bit above a Jag and he's going to be getting early down work, like, maybe he is an RB20, RB16 type guy. And I feel like there's been enough negativity that now you might be looking at getting value on Sermon, right? Where it's like, yeah, at 204 in a super flex draft or 203 or something like that, you get a guy who could be your weekly flex. And so I don't know, you know, I have the same concerns, but I also feel like maybe the hesitancy has gotten too hesitant, where it's like, there's a chance there and we should be thinking about that chance and buying into the upside to some extent.
And there shouldn't be that hesitancy at all. Right now, Trey Sermon's getting all the first team reps, and I think that continues. And the beat writers have noted that there's nothing but rave reviews about what he's done, which there's nothing negative to say about anyone this time of year. But they have noted that the Oklahoma offense that he played in before Ohio State is very similar to what they run in San Francisco, and he's way ahead of the curve for a rookie. So I think they traded up in the third round to get him, and they're going to give him every opportunity to be a 1A or a 1B. I just think he's going to be more of a 1B this year.
It's interesting. In rookie drafts, I've seen him go at 110, and I've seen him go at 210. It just depends on how individual people are valuing him, and there's absolutely value there. So you should be looking for him anywhere in that early part of the second, I think, is the sweet spot.
And, of course, as Don points out, because he is moving so much, that just shows how you have to pay attention to how your league is set up, what is the scoring of your league, and that should determine how you draft players. Don't just follow somebody's rankings, because they don't know what your settings are. I know I wrote an article earlier this offseason. I always say we should link to our articles. I'll do a verbal link. One of the things you need to do is look into all the rules. You need to pay attention to your rules. Like, you need to pay attention to what your specific league does, because if you don't, somebody else will, and they're going to win your league. All right, gentlemen, it is time for the speed round to touch on five more battles. I'm going to ask you the question. You get 30 seconds to pontificate. Ready? Don, the backfield of the Jets is filled with an obnoxious array of disappointments, but will Michael Carter save the day?
I like Michael Carter the most out of any of the running backs that they happen to have. I think he's the one who gets you the most value because he's going to get the most catches. I think that's his real skill set and value here. And with a young quarterback, you expect the easy passes, the dump offs, the swing routes, the wheel routes out of the backfield to be very high value. And Carter definitely made a living on that at NC State. So he's the one at North Carolina. So he's the one I want of the assembled Jets running backs.
out of the two North Carolina backs, if they both stay healthy, I believe Michael Carter has the better year, fantasy-wise, than Javonte Williams. Kit, after New York, I didn't think it could get any worse. Looking at the Texans' backfield, who is all hat and no horse?
The answer is don't do it to yourself. But if I had to choose, I think those that you can like thoroughly discount would be Mark Ingram. Oh, gosh. I'm like, there is a fourth guy there. The two that I could see providing...
Burkhead.
Sorry. Yes, Burkhead coming off the ACL. Thank you very much. So, yes, I would say you completely discount basically Mark Ingram and Burkhead. Burkhead's coming off an ACL as a guy who was maybe functional as a pass protector and ball catcher, but can't be relied upon, didn't have athleticism to begin with. And Ingram, you know, runs hard, but it is slowing, right? I mean, last year he ran hard behind one of the best offensive running teams in the league and didn't do anything. So I think it comes down to what you're doing with Lindsey and David Johnson. And to be frank, I wouldn't want either of them. I wouldn't want to rely on either of them. But I could see either of them providing, you know, spot start weekly type flex play, right? I mean, they're going to be a bad team. Bad teams dump the ball off a lot to their running backs. Deshaun Watson didn't, but I don't expect Deshaun Watson to be their starter this year. So whether it be Davis Mills or...
cut off. That's over 30 seconds. Awuga, awuga. I was blowing the horn. The real answer is Buddy Howell's going to lead that backfield. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just happy that they got rid of Duke Johnson so that I don't mistakenly pick up Duke Johnson instead of David Johnson, thinking that D. Johnson is the guy who's going to rule the league. I'm not saying that happened, but it happened. Number three, Rob, Drake has joined the Raiders, leaving Chase in the desert. Will he be able to hold off Connor with minimal effort?
So Chase Edmonds recently said he's not the typical 20-carry guy and to expect a lot of James Connor at the end of games. And I agree, he's not a typical 20-carry guy. And I expect to see a lot of James Connor at all times, not just at the end of games. I'm not a big Chase Edmonds fan. And diving into some running back metrics a little more over the offseason, I've risen a bit on James Conner, and I think he can actually exceed expectations in this offense and win the lead job and take most of the carries away from Edmonds. I did a little bit of research, and surprisingly, James Conner is one of 8 running backs last year to put up at least 500 yards and have a 10% juke rate or better, which... Juke rate, we're talking broken tackles against the amount of the number of attempts he had. And that is an impressive metric. He's in elite company with guys like Kamara, Nick Chubb. And I was not expecting that. If he can stay healthy, it's his backfield.
Until his leg falls off.
Yes. He can't stay healthy.
Until his leg falls off. I also have him ranked overall as number one and running backs who have their names tattooed on their arms. Gosh, what an asshole. Up next, sorry. That's my little side note on James Conner. Don, I know you are a homer for the City of Steel. Outside of Najee, who appears to be the best deal?
The remaining group of running backs is definitely a clouded mash, but I think the guy who really has the best value here happens to be Anthony McFarland. Last year, we kind of looked at him as an afterthought. This year, I think he really is the sidecar. They're going to a zone scheme running game, which means he's going to get the outside touches, and they're going to be able to attack the line with speed and select their own way to go. So plays are to the right or to the left, and you find your spot. Shifty, fast, guys that can juke are the ones to take. Therefore, you want McFarlane, and this kind of leaves Benny Snell kind of out of the mix, I suppose.
Which is fine. I know Snell was not as impressive last year as we hoped he would.
No, he definitely was a disappointment.
Something that's interesting, I don't have the stats yet. I know DLF just made a merger with another stats company. They've been talking about their updated stats. And they actually have stats that show players who take the first option in a zone read, something like that. It's going to be interesting to see what turns out once I get access to those numbers. I'm interested to see the depth of the data we can get. Because I feel like we have a much more rich data field for wide receivers.
That's going to be super interesting because you always hear about the one cut runners. It'll really be interesting to see who really is a one cut runner and who isn't.
Yeah. All right. For the last one, I'm going to need all of your help if you're able. We're going to go up to Buffalo, so try to avoid the tables. Did Breida bring any trouble to the order? Or do we need to keep both Moss and Devin like a hoarder? Kit?
Oh, God. You don't want any of them. I mean, it's, stay away. I mean, Josh Allen's the goal line back. I guess I was a Singletary truther a while ago because he is pretty efficient, but Moss looked better to the eye test. And just, no, don't touch any of it. I know it's a boring answer. I know it's a cop-out, but you don't want any of it. It's not Burita.
Don?
Of the three, I want Zach Moss. He's definitely the biggest. He's going to have the goal line touches, and he has the most efficiency at those times when Allen actually does hand off the ball. But that's the issue here is when will Allen actually hand off the ball?
Rob?
Give me Zach Moss. I think he's a great value for his current ADP. And he was definitely the back that was most trusted down the stretch before he went down with a pretty big injury at the end of the season.
All right. Well, that finishes off the camp battles for tonight. Next week, we are going to tackle quarterbacks and tight ends. Riders, it is time for tags where we let you know our final thoughts and where you can find us. Rob.
You can find me on Twitter and on Reddit at TheRotoRob. And final thoughts, I forgot to bring him up. Josh Johnson, if he makes the roster in Seattle, look out. I love the guy. He's a Ray Rice clone from a small school, and I think he can definitely make the 53-man roster, and Pete Carroll will love him. He's a tough runner.
Man, I love that Warhawk, man. Louisiana Monroe, one of my pipeline schools, got him on two rosters already. Kit, you're up.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at KitV_DynastyFF, on Reddit at KitKit123. I'm currently trying to work on a vacated targets type of article that's a little more exciting than the standard vacated targets article. So doing research on that, and hopefully you guys will get something out of it when I get it out. So thank you all for listening.
Don.
As you guys know, I'm kind of the social media Sasquatch here. So if you need me, you can get us at Rider Dynasty, and the boys will forward it over to me. Hey, give them a shout out. They'll probably read it on air and make fun of me at the time. So it'll be fun. Especially if it's funny. Also, guys, the best info you can get is from the beat writers for the individual teams. Definitely do your homework. Follow the beat writers. They're the ones who put in the real sweat equity, and they're the ones who really get the pulse for what you're going to see on the field. So that's where you really want to go instead of the major clearinghouses.
Thank you, Don, Kit, and Rob for joining me tonight. I'm at JJ Wenner on Twitter, and I would like to use this time to leave you with a quick Dynasty Basics tip for the week. If you have a smartphone, set a weekly reminder for your waiver deadline. It is easy to forget waivers during the summer, but you are gathering research with every article and every tweet that you read and any pod that you listen to. Most managers are not paying attention at this time of year. Make sure you are using this opportunity to cash out on the research that you are doing. So thank you for tuning in. And remember, never say anything to make a meeting longer or cut a happy hour short. Boat drinks, my friends. Boat drinks.